Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 11, Chapter 22, Text Number 15. Daro Vija Vipakabhyam Yo Vidvan Janma Samyamo Taro Vilakshano Drasta Evam Drasta Tano Pritak. Daro, of a tree, bija, birth from, its seed, vipakabhyam, destruction subsequent to maturity, ya, one who, vidvan, in knowledge, janma, of birth, samyamo, and death, taro, from the tree, vilakshana, distinct, drashta, the witness, evam, in the same way, drashta, the witness, tano, of the material body. Pritak is separate. Translation. One who observes the birth of a tree from its seed and the ultimate death of the tree after maturity certainly remains a distinct observer, separate from the tree. In the same way, the witness of the birth and death of the material body remains separate from it. Purport. As a reference to trees, vipaka indicates the final transformation called death. In reference to other types of plants such as rice, vipaka indicates the stage of maturity in which death also occurs. Thus, by common observation, one can understand the actual position of one's material body in one's own position as the transcendental observer. Shri Chaitanya Manovishtam Sapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Kvapadam Yam Tarati Swaparantikam Pancha Kalpa Trivishcha Kripa Sindhuja Eva Cha Patitanam Pavnebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadha Shiva Sari Gaur Bhaktavinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So there's a verse in Srimad Bhagavatam that says, Ya samohito jiva atmanam tri gunatmakam paropi manutenatam takritam shabipadyate. That due to this external energy, the living entity, although transcendental to the three modes of material nature, thinks of himself as a material product and therefore undergoes the reactions of material miseries. So the package that we have in this material world, our body, is constituted of material elements that have their beginning and that have their destruction, ultimately all coming from the Supreme Lord himself. And the biggest ignorance, of course, is to identify with these different gross and subtle elements as the real self. So the false ego or ahankar gets fed by the conception of I am the body, I am the senses, I am the mind, and I am the intelligence. So these elements of material creation that Krishna is explaining to Sri Uddhava is meant to give us an understanding, is meant to give us knowledge about how to disentangle ourselves from these material elements, from identifying with these material elements as the absolute truth. So sometimes we see, we understand the material world as being separate from Krishna. But of course, we cannot separate anything from Krishna. Everything is either directly or indirectly a product of Krishna's energy. So we are the living entities undergoing different reactions, different miseries, based on its previous activities, based on our previous karma. And of course, the body, the package that we're getting is each and every individual is getting exactly what they've asked for in their previous birth. So from the gender that we are put in by the modes of material nature to the family that we're born in, to the circle of friends that we'll be contacting, to the community or nation that we belong to, etc. These are all desires that we were contemplating in our previous birth. And because the Supreme Lord is always accompanying the jiva, so we may say, this is explained in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, in the Adilila, it's explained, some arguments may be given that why should we be suffering for our previous birth when we don't remember? Why should we be punished? I don't remember my previous birth, so why do I have to undergo such tribulations? Why does my health have to be bad? why don't I have a beautiful face like some people? Why isn't my IQ the same as such and such a person? Or why do I have straight hair instead of curly hair? So we can have so many different arguments, etc. And we can say, but I don't remember having specific desires in my previous life. I don't remember committing sinful activities in my spiritual life. Why should I be suffering then? If I can't remember my activities, why should I suffer? And because we're in such a forgetful state of Krishna, the scriptures are explaining to us that Krishna expands himself as the super soul, Antaryami, that the super soul in the Bhagavad Gita is explained to be the sanctioner, the overseer and permitter of activities of the jiva. So in the Upanishads, that analogy given of the two birds sitting on a tree, one is the jiva and one is the Paramatma. So although we might be in our forgetful state of knowing our original position in relation to Krishna, the super soul never forgets. Just as in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is telling Arjuna, many births and deaths you and I have taken, I can remember all of them, whereas you cannot. So we go through all these different things and we may argue and say, well, I cannot remember my sinful activities, I cannot remember my previous lives. But the super soul is with us and he remembers, and it's because of him, well, he's permitting these activities for us to be naturally going through our results of previous activities. So we can't just say, I don't remember, therefore I shouldn't be suffering my past misdeeds. Krishna accompanies us in every single birth, in every single species of life. So it's not that Krishna expands into a human body, expands himself and enters into the body of a human being and not into the body of an animal, not into the body of an aquatic, a mammal, a bird, etc. So Krishna's potency in Nirguna, he is beyond the modes of material nature, but at the same time we understand that he's the source of everything. He's the maintainer. He's the annihilator, and it's because of him these what is deemed or what is termed as material comes to an end. So there is a point that the false ego can actually also come to an end. The conception of I and mine can also be destroyed. And this false ego, of course, is enhanced by different activities that may be performed by the jiva. This false ego, beginning with I am the body, the mind and the senses, expands in different ways of enjoyment. Even on an intellectual platform, mental speculation, even through just performing normal work, normal duty, trying to be a good civilian, trying to be a good citizen, or a good humanitarian. But these are always tainted with some of the modes of material nature. The highest thing, of course, is not to be on Satvagun. That's not the goal. The goal of life is not to be eternally situated on the mode of goodness. We use that as a springboard to be able to absorb more transcendental knowledge and to be able to enter into Vishuddha Sattva, pure goodness. But the goal of life is not to become just a peaceful person. The goal of life is not just to become an equipoise-controlled person. That's just the beginning. These are just little dishes, you can say, of practicing the process of devotional service. Our main concern in devotional service, of course, the reason why we're performing devotional service is to always remember Krishna and never forget Him. So all the injunctions that we're performing, all the rules and regulations under the process of Vairi Sadhana Bhakti, because at this point we have to follow some regimen, a very strict regimen, to try and deal with the mind. Because we're identifying so much with the mind, we're identifying so much with this propensity of wanting to enjoy separately from Krishna, we have these rules and regulations given by the different acharyas that help us get off the mental platform. So our goal is not just to be situated on the best mode in the material universe. We're not trying to create a comfortable situation, as Srila Prabhupada will always point out, that we're trying to escape the clutches of the illusory energy. And this illusory energy, Krishna has explained that it is very difficult to overcome. Daivihai esha gunamai mama maya juratraya. This energy of mind is very powerful. And when the jiva, due to ahankar, when the jiva starts thinking, actually this is who I am, I'm meant to enjoy this energy, ahankar vimudatma, this false ego, we become fools, we become asses. And we start thinking, this is who I am, I am meant to suffer like this. And when there's little suffering, we're thinking this is happiness. This is what the illusory energy does. A little relief from suffering or different variations of suffering, we're thinking, oh, this is actually, maybe this is what happiness is. Because it's so ingrained in our consciousness since time immemorial to identify with the body and try to enjoy the external energy. But just as we were hearing in the past week from His Holiness Devamita Swami, he was speaking about this, what does he call it? Codependency. That although we're battered time and time again, although we are used and abused and mistreated by the functioning of the material mind, we still go back to it and take shelter of the mind. Now this is real illusion. Like sometimes we find in relationships, and maybe we have experienced it, maybe we haven't, or we have friends who've experienced it, they are in very violent relationships, or their family life is very violent, etc. And then you try and give them some advice about how to actually get out of that situation. And then after some time, they see you now as the enemy. And then they further go back into that situation because they see it as the only way. So sometimes you create this codependency on the illusory energy. The illusory energy covers, kicks us, covers us, and keeps us down, bound. As Prabhupada writes in Bhagavad Gita, the stringent laws of material nature. So a stringent, very difficult position to be in, very uncomfortable, like a fish out of water. So the illusory energy makes us adapt to that horrible condition of suffering in the material world. And we try to make it a comfortable place. Even when we're trying to practice Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti, we try and make it a comfortable situation sometimes. And Srila Prabhupada did not want that we just stay on the same platform, that we just do the needful, just do the basics and go to the temple once a week, worship the deities once a week, go for Janmashtami at least every year, get your points, eternal bank balance. Krishna sees everything. But as we see in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is explaining to Arjuna gradually which yoga is the highest, which type of yogi is the highest, how he explains different transcendentalists. He just doesn't explain one type of transcendentalist. He's explaining different types of transcendentalists. And he ends up with the topmost. And when he explains to Arjuna, Machit Matkat Prana Bodhyantas Parasparam Kasyantas Timam Nityam Tasyanticha Ramanticha. Krishna is explaining to Arjuna that the top, that his devotees are deriving great satisfaction and bliss in hearing Krishna Katha, and they're enlightening one another about such topics. So in Bhakti Yoga, we're not just trying to alleviate our miseries. We're not just trying to gain some jnana, get some knowledge. We're not just trying to practice rules and regulations for the sake of practicing rules and regulations. That is actually an offense. We're meant to be cultivating an understanding about what these rules and regulations are supposed to bring within the heart of the sadhaka. So gradually, in the beginning, of course, most of us come from, you know, wanting something. You know, our devotional service in the beginning is a bit mixed. We're trying to escape some unfortunate events in our lives. We're approaching Krishna sometimes out of fear, out of anxiety, out of frustration, and we need some shelter. But gradually, as we apply the antidote, as we apply the scientific process properly, then the necessary steps start taking place. We start developing faith and trust in the Lord. We start hearing about His pastimes and hearing about His activities. And then gradually, we start removing the unwanted things from the heart. And we start wanting to have a loving reciprocation with Krishna. Not just any kind of reciprocation, but a loving reciprocation. Because up until that point, if we don't develop an attraction for hearing about Krishna's pastimes, then what are we going to remember at the point of death? Or who are we going to remember at the final point, as these verses are speaking, that the material body is temporary and is always undergoing changes. And at the point of death, that is the final change. And at that specific moment, your thought patterns or the impressions that are in your mind, they are going to come out. And what have you been doing your entire life while practicing devotional service? You know, have we just been going from one Rath Yatra to another social scene? Because sometimes I used to ask these questions when I was in Durban. I said, you know, Rath Yatra is great. I was still a new devotee. And it was heaps of fun. 2 weeks, you know, big marquees and processions going for about 6 hours, 12 sannyasis, prasadam everywhere. You're rolling on the ground because you just have prasadam falling everywhere. Amazing classes, you see devotees from other centers you haven't seen, etc. And sometimes it may look like, oh, we're just going to have fun and jai dancing for Jagannath, but what should be the internal mood of practicing devotional service, especially a festival like Rath Yatra, the Easter Dev of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, service in separation, Lord Jagannath, the ecstatic emotions. So we're not just practicing bhakti, we're not just practicing devotional service for any kind of external show or to try and fit in, because we have so many devotees, so many festivals. You go there, you're wearing your best dhoti, you're wearing your best sari. All of these, of course, are just external. Our kirtan, our shravanam, our bhajan is considered useless to the point that we're not cultivating humility and understanding our real position, that we're servants of Krishna. We're not serving ourselves. And this is one quote that I printed for a friend of mine, and I found it to be very useful for myself as well. That if we're not cultivating this mood of understanding, I'm an eternal servant of Krishna, then our devotional practice is like a drop of water in the desert. If we do not understand all these verses in Srimad Bhagavatam are supposed to bring us to a point of remembering Krishna and never forgetting Krishna. And we can do it in different ways. In Krishna book we have different pastimes where some people are thinking of Krishna, you know, wanting to kill Krishna. You know, if we want to be Maha wrestlers, we can imitate Mustika and Chanura and can think about, you know, wrestling with Krishna, or we can meditate on Shishupal, etc. But the best way is to develop a loving relationship with Krishna. And that is done through following this process of Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti, the way in which Srila Prabhupada has given it. Not that we manufacture our own process of devotional service or our own regiment of sadhana bhakti. Even the books that were given, Srimad Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, Chaitanya Charitamrita, Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, the books that are given by the different Goswamis. And then also understanding our lineage, where we're actually coming from. So if we understand the great wealth that we've been given in these books, the do's and don'ts that were given in the process of devotional service, if we understand the mood of the acharyas of giving Krishna to others, not just keeping Krishna for ourselves, because if we're practicing properly, we'll want to share Krishna with everyone else. When you have the greatest wealth, when you have the greatest fortune, you don't want to be miserly about it. You want to give it out. That's the quality of a living entity, sharing Krishna with one another. And that we can see from Srimati Radharani, how she's always pushing others to serve Krishna. Not just, I'm going to serve Krishna by myself, I'm Srimati Radharani. She's always arranging for the different devotees to serve Krishna personally and intimately. So if we can meditate on this point, that we're practicing the devotional service, we're trying to detach ourselves from this understanding of the self as the body or the mind or the senses, and we're trying to attach ourselves to Krishna through his pastimes, through his activities, his different qualities, and his devotees. So it's not that just we try and logically try to understand Krishna, or we just speak about Krishna casually. Devotional service is not a casual affair. It's a serious thing. If we look at the creation and we listen as to how Lord Brahma is creating, and we listen to the descriptions about the length of the day of Lord Brahma, his night, the destruction, and how many countless universes there are, countless and millions and millions of universes, and then we happen to fall in a universe where Lord Chaitanya has just left. The Kali Yuga, where Lord Chaitanya himself has decided to descend. We happen to be in that situation. And he chose to come. As you understand, Lord Chaitanya is the Chana avatar, he's the hidden incarnation. And therefore, Krishna is called Tri Yuga, because he seemed to appear just in three ages. And Lord Chaitanya comes hidden as a devotee, the best devotee, Sri Krishna Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So if we try and understand, if we try and understand our roots from there, that there's innumerable universes, and we happen to be on an earth planet where Lord Chaitanya has just appeared, where the six Goswamis, the most intimate devotees of Radha and Krishna, have also appeared. And they have given their books. They have given their mercy, their transcendental ecstasies, as Srila Prabhupada would say. His purports are his transcendental ecstasies. So they have left all of that. And in spiritual history, if you speak about 500 years ago, 5,000 years ago, it's not such a long time. Because we can still go to Sri Mayapur, and we can still go to the birthplace of Lord Chaitanya, where he appeared himself. And we can still go to the Yamuna. We can still go and see Giriraj Maharaj. So all of these are there. And all the temples in Vrindavan that have been excavated by the seven Goswamis, they're still there. We can have darshan. So we have more than one, more than two. We have many ways in which Srila Prabhupada has given us guidance. He has given us ways in which we can shield ourselves from this external energy by taking shelter of this process of devotional service. The five potent forms of devotional service, chanting Hare Krishna, hearing Srimad Bhagavatam Bhagavad Gita, worshipping the deity, associating with devotees, and residing in a holy place. We all have access to this. And if we sincerely and seriously stick to this routine, as Srila Prabhupada so often stressed, that if we stick to this routine of hearing and chanting attentively, not just any kind of hearing and chanting, but hearing and chanting attentively, then Krishna will never leave us. So if we try and make the hearing and chanting process very dear to us, very important to us, then Krishna will never leave. And you can ask any book distributor that the more they read and hear about the pastimes of Lord Krishna, Srila Prabhupada, the more they want to give out that knowledge. And in that way, the books are always with them. So they're always studying Prabhupada's books, and they're always giving Srila Prabhupada's books. So when we're sincere in that effort, then Krishna will use us as an instrument to spread Lord Chaitanya's mission. So by following all these healthy ways of protecting ourselves from the illusory energy, from the external energy, we take shelter of this process of devotional service, not on a superficial level, not for show, not for anything else, but to develop a loving relationship with Krishna. By understanding Krishna's birth, Krishna's activities, his pastimes, we can get to go back to our original position. And our hearing and our chanting should be to a point where we're actually desperate for Krishna. So sometimes, you know, we can just chant, or we can really chant at the point of, I'm in Kali Yuga, I'm a conditioned soul, I have this process of bhakti, all I can do is sincerely endeavor, Krishna, please help me. Lord Chaitanya said, Srinara Pisina Ichana Tariva Sahishina Amanina Manadina Kirtanya Sadahari. That we can see our japa transform based on this verse. We can see our devotional service transformed based on this verse. The one quality that Lord Chaitanya himself becomes so overwhelmed by is humility. In his pastimes with his devotees, Raghunath Das Goswami, in Jagannath Puri, Lord Chaitanya would hear that Raghunath is honoring old prasadam that's been chucked out from the Jagannath Mandir. The type of prasad that even the cows didn't want to have. So it's all checked out. It's been there for days. The cows chew it and spit it out. And then Raghunath Das, in a very natural way, not that he was trying to imitate anything or put himself on a platform. He wasn't a sahaja. He wasn't cheapening the process. He would go and take that prasad, wash it, and eat it, because he thought that is what he deserved. And then when Lord Chaitanya saw this kind of humility, he himself went to go see Raghunath Das and embraced him. So by following this process of devotional service, one will naturally become humble. It's a natural transformation. We cannot jump the queue, like how you can jump the queue for prasad on a Janmashtami night. I'm sure everyone has done that, or any other festival. We cannot jump the queue. There's a lot of baby's down. There's a lot of purification that must happen within the heart. And purification shouldn't be seen as a bad thing. So, purification brings us to our pure state. So whenever you can feel, or if you hear that you're getting purified, just know that you're actually being brought back to your pure state. It's not that purification, oh my God, I'm so dirty. But purification means you're being cleaned up. And very soon you'll be brought back to your natural, pure state of consciousness. And this happens as long as we develop the patience and the tolerance. We have to tolerate ourselves in this process. Sometimes you want to advance quicker than what we're doing, but it takes time. And we can just be patient. Tolerate our shortcomings, tolerate our anattas, and deal with them in the best possible way. Always taking shelter of Guru Sadhvita Shastra. So just to summarize, yes, this external energy is difficult to overcome. It sometimes seems as insurmountable because we identify so much with that external energy. We identify with the body, the material body. We identify with our mind, with our senses, intelligence. But by taking shelter of Mukunda, one who gives liberation, of Krishna, then we can actually get out of these stringent laws of material nature that keep us bound to the cycle of birth and death. And when we do that, naturally and gradually, taking shelter of Srila Prabhupada in the process of devotional service, we get put into our natural environment where we have a spiritual body, spiritual mind, spiritual senses. So I'll stop there for now and ask if there's any comments or questions on what we've spoken about. Yes, Prabhu.
You mentioned that we have to cultivate the good qualities from the message of the Bhagavatam or the aspects of Krishna. It makes a lot of sense when we read and hear.
You want application? How to apply that?
Yeah, but once we leave this place now again, we'll go back and then we'll be so
you forget what you just heard and then break the conditioning. Yeah, it's true. I was mentioning how we have to cultivate the good certain qualities. We have to hear and chant attentively. But sometimes we find that we do all these things and then you walk outside the temple room and it's like it's all gone. We're back into our normal swing of doing things. So, of course, as I mentioned, we have so many previous conditionings that are just ingrained in our consciousness from so many births. So initially, actually there's a verse in here that explains. Yeah. So initially, sometimes, because of the different anattas we may have, or because of our inattentiveness, we were easy to forget instructions. We hear every day that we're not the body. Every day. Even for those who have been practicing for 30 years, for 40 years, they will still tell you that they're having trouble understanding that they're not the body. So we get given different instructions, and it takes time for us to actually realize, because we're just getting a lot of jnana. But as we practice, we have to start realizing the knowledge that we get and put it into application. So we might feel that as soon as I walk out, all the knowledge is gone. Similar thing with death. We see death happening every single day, but no one thinks it's going to happen to them. You see people getting old. I still can't perceive that I'm going to get old. It's still a bit hard for me to understand that I'm going to be old one day, and everything's just going to go down south, and eye vision is just going to... So sometimes it's very hard for us to perceive that, because we're still poked and influenced by the modes of material nature. They give us a lot of forgetfulness. So in the purport to text 57, Srila Prabhupada here has given an analogy. He says, after one awakens from a dream, the dim reflection of the dream may linger in one's memory. Similarly, one engaging in the devotional service of the Lord may be troubled sometimes by the dim reflection of sinful life. So sometimes, because of our sinful activities, some of which haven't really manifested, unmanifested karma. So some of it is still lingering in there, and sometimes, you know, we get influenced by it as we practice devotional service. But the thing is that we should never stop the process, and we should just continue. So if we remain enthusiastic in devotional service, it's utsaha, enthusiasm in devotional service, gradually these things won't bother us so much. It's like whenever it happens randomly. Sometimes when you're distributing a book on the street to one of the women, especially the first canto, and they'll happen to open up a page in the Bhagavad Gita where it says women are less intelligent, they are not to be trusted, they're just like politicians, you know, the whole spiel. And then immediately they're disturbed. And sometimes even female devotees, they still have a hard time understanding what Prabhupada means when he says that. And one devotee told me, if you're practicing devotional service properly, if you're engaged, if your consciousness is engaged in devotional service, hearing, chanting, worshipping the Lord, serving the deities, the devotees, then you won't get disturbed. Because you're not identifying with your gender. And this is not what Prabhupada was talking about. So, we may get dim reflections or tastes of our sinful reactions, not in full, but a little bit. Just like Prabhupada said, you know, the fan is going, you switch it off, but there's still some motion. So we will be a little bit forgetful sometimes. Sometimes we're a bit lackadaisical, we're a bit lazy. But we should just continue with enthusiasm, knowing what our goal is, knowing where our destination is. And always to keep ourselves around devotees who are enthusiastic themselves to hear and chant. Because if all fails, if you have any problem whatsoever in devotional service, if you're feeling down, if you're feeling lazy, if you're feeling like you're the biggest demon in the universe, just chant Hare Krishna or dance in kirtan. It all goes away. It all goes. Yes, Toka Krishna Prabhu.
You mentioned earlier that our question posed in Chaitanya Charitamrita about why are we suffering as if we
can't remember
exactly our past lives. Some people ask also, what is the point of the whole law of karma if we're not learning anything from what we've done wrong in the past and now we're suffering since we can't remember?
So why is there karma?
What is the point? You know,
what's the point?
If karma is meant to teach us something and make us better eventually, and to bring us back to our pure condition, then why can't we remember what we're suffering for?
Good question. What's the point of karma if we're not learning any lessons birth after birth? Well, the point of karma, fruit of activities, is to keep you in a suffering state. And if you don't, sometimes people don't admit that they've been burnt, I'll never do that again, but it does happen. That we are learning lessons even to people who are atheistic, or to those people who deny the existence of God, or who deny Krishna's personal existence. They still have to act. Everyone has to act. And even if we take it down to a material level, every single thing that we do, if we're keeping a job, if we're parents, you know, we follow laws all the time. Whether you're on your bicycle, you know, if you're on your skateboard, etc., there's certain things that you're supposed to do. And if you don't, you're going to get something in return. And some people do it over and over again. They still get bashed, still get bashed. And externally, it might look like they're not learning any lessons. But internally, they are. They'll know, I'm not going to go via this option. I'm not going to go to Crown Casino, because last time I went to Crown Casino, I almost lost everything. So I'm going to do another sort of gambling, etc. So externally, it looks like people are not learning anything. You're just suffering over and over again, and you're not changing your ways, but you're changing different bodies all the time. So that means you're cultivating different desires all the time. So your thought patterns are changing. You'll want to have a specific body because, you know, you've realized something from the present body that you had that has made you want to get another situation. So you've learned something, even if it still keeps you on a under the grips of the modes of material nature. You're still learning something from that, and you desire something different. And this is something, people's desires are changing all the time. You know, it starts with wanting this, and then by the time you're 18, your desire is changing. It's influence. Your activities change. When you're 35, your desire is changing. When you're 40, your desires change. So karma in itself is always teaching us a lesson. That's why we're always after different things. That's why in the material world, you know, you have this parade of suffering. Because we get taught all these different lessons. We accept this and then we chew it, and chewing the chewed over and over again. And then we accept another thing, the same thing happens. But whenever we make that transition, it's always based on a different desire. So karma in itself, it is teaching us a lesson. Sometimes the karma keeps us on the same platform, or it takes us even higher. Well, out of the five subject matters of the Bhagavad Gita, karma is one that's not a constant. So we can change our karma, we can change our activities and our desires. So karma in itself, it's there to facilitate our transmigration from one body to another. So it's a very vital point. We can't escape it. We're always active. So although externally it might look like we're not learning anything, but we actually are, because our desires are always changing. Okay. Maybe everyone is desiring prasadam after Ekadashi. Buckwheat and curd. Okay, I think Brenda's excited. Okay, do you have one more point?
One more question. Just when everybody was ready for the sun. In the verse itself, it says, just as the observer of the tree, he observes that tree, he or she observes that tree, coming out of the seed and then maturing and then dying. And we can understand that it's something external to that tree, right? Then the comparison is made to
us being in the body, watching it, going through the same
different time. Changes.
So how is it, you know, a valid comparison? Because in the first case, it is someone external observing it, and in the second case, someone is actually being in that situation watching it. I mean, the observer, you know, would be inside the treatment if the comparison was exact.
Yeah. Well, in this first, of course, the one who's observing the birth and the different stages of the tree obviously is someone external, like whether it's a horticulturist or etc. whatever. He's separate from the tree. So they take it back to the living entity who is within the body, trapped within the body, still witnessing the different changes. So it's showing that point. The point the analogy is making is this separating matter from spirit. So the tree is there, and then there's something else beyond, besides the tree, who's observing the different 9 changes of the tree, etc. And similarly, within our tree, our body, there's also an observer who is separate, although seated within that tree, is separate from that tree, and is also observing all these different changes. So the main point of the analogy, my understanding is that it's making that clear distinction between the soul and the body. So whether it's from an external, internal point of view, the distinction is there, that we're observing the different transformations of the body, although we're seated within that tree of the body. Okay, Granthraj Srimad Bhagavatam, King, Srila Prabhupada, King, Jaya Nitya Gaura Premanande.